Welcome to Slaughterhouse Stories. I hope you enjoy the stories I have for you tonight. Hello to all you things that go bump in the night. Hello to all you humans as well. Welcome to the show that brings you creepypastas, short scary stories, and dark horror-themed poetry from all across the world. This is the Slaughterhouse Stories Podcast, Episode 8, Mr. Cindy. I'm your host and narrator, Ghost Train, telling you to lock your doors, get under your blanket, and keep the lights on. Now let's get spooky. To start us off tonight is a tale by Blue Corch 28 about two women who were best friends and loved the children that were at the hospital that one of them worked at. One helped them as their nurse, and the other, Rosalie Frederick, brought them fresh baked pies and would play games with them. Everything was wonderful until one day a game didn't go as expected. Listen for the whisper, listen for the scream, and enjoy Come Out, wherever you are. There was a hospital that once stood at the end of the street where I live. It was a hospital for children who had illnesses that could not be cured. My grandmother was a nurse there in the late 1940s and early 50s. She adored the children, despite their ailments. She had a friend who also adored the children. Her name, Rosalie Frederick, would bring fresh baked pies from her home and ask the children if they wanted to play games. The children loved games, especially when it involved a special reward. If one of the children would beat Rosalie in a game, they would have the pie first, before dinner. If they did not, Rosalie would eat it all by herself. Of course, it was not true. Rosalie allowed the children to beat her in a game. One day in the autumn of 1953, Rosalie brought her signature chocolate pie for the children. "Let's play hide and seek," she said to them. My grandmother insisted that they stay indoors as the weather had been rainy and the ground was still muddy. Rosalie said she would count to 50 and the children would hide and try to beat Rosalie by getting to the safe spot in the kitchen where the pie was. Rosalie began to count to 50. And she heard the children run to their hiding spots. Once she finished counting, she began to look for them. She checked their rooms and any other hiding spot while saying, come out, wherever you are." Rosalie reached the bottom level and decided to check the top floor. The hospital had two floors, but the second floor was not being used as it was going through repairs. Rosalie was sure the children would hide there, as there were many hiding spots. She went to the second floor, where there were many scaffoldings that the repairmen used to redo the walls and doors. The repairmen were not coming in on this day, as it was a Saturday. She checked the first few rooms, but no children. She didn't notice that one of the scaffoldings was not properly set up. It was holding heavy wooden boards, and it would not hold any longer. Rosalie walked under the scaffolding and checked the room there. No children. She called out, come out, wherever you are." Suddenly, the scaffolding collapsed on top of her, the heavy wooden boards crushing her. The children and my grandmother waited patiently for Rosalie to find them. They were excited to have chocolate pie to eat before dinner. They waited a long time, and one of them decided to rush to the kitchen, and the other children followed. My grandmother got really worried when Rosalie didn't show. She and the children waited for her in the kitchen. "Can we have a bite?" one of the children asked. "Let's wait a few minutes," my grandmother said, and so they waited. When it started getting late and dinner was ready, my grandmother decided to go look for Rosalie. She asked the cook to keep watch over the children while she went to look. My grandmother checked everywhere on the first floor, but no Rosalie. My grandmother knew something was wrong. Her best friend was never into pranks. She then thought of the second floor, but she was told not to let the children go up there, as it was not safe. She went up there anyway. She found the collapsed scaffolding, and to her horror, she saw the crushed body of her best friend, Rosalie Frederick. Emergency personnel arrived, but it was already too late to save Rosalie. The children were heartbroken over the death of their beloved playmate. Rosalie's body was set in a closed casket, as she was too horrific to look at. Her funeral was held in the hospital grounds, and the children and my grandmother attended. My grandmother decided to leave the hospital on Christmas. She bid farewell to the children and said she would pray for their health. Before she left, she went to the second floor where her best friend was killed. She bid farewell, but she told me as soon as she turned around to leave, she heard a familiar voice. She wouldn't say whose voice it was, as she was too afraid to say. A few years before the hospital was set to be torn down, my friends and I decided to check it out. The doors were left unlocked, thanks to explorers who came earlier. We checked the first floor. The beds were still in the rooms, and the kitchen had some rotten food that the rodents refused to eat. We then checked the second floor. My grandmother told me the hospital decided not to reopen the second floor following Rosalie's death. There was a cold breeze coming in, and a chill went down my spine. Then we heard a woman's voice. "Come out, come out, wherever you are." I noticed that my friends' faces turned white. "Did you hear that?" one of them asked. The voice came again. "Come out, wherever you are." "Who's there?" we shouted. The voice repeated much louder this time. "Come out, wherever you are." We turned and ran. We reached the stairs and we ran out as fast as we could. Today, the hospital's gone, making way for new houses. Bodies of the children who died there were moved to another cemetery. The grave workers also found the body of Rosalie Frederick. Each of the children, including Rosalie, were given a funeral and were buried in a churchyard not far from where the hospital once stood. My grandmother attended the funeral and I went along. I was terrified of seeing Rosalie's casket, but I knew that she would be happy to be with the children she adored. Whenever I walked past the former hospital grounds, I swear I could hear Rosalie's voice, calling out to the children that she played with, come out, wherever you are." A simple game of hide and seek will now go on forever, whether the building and children are there or not. Let's hope Rosalie finds new friends to play with in the night. Now, before your heart stops racing, and before you can become comfortable again, let's keep the scares going and give you something to think about at 3 a.m. Because author Renegade wants you thinking of his story that touches on the myth of the witching hour, the devil's hour, the story of what happens at 3 a.m. And he wants it to haunt you the way the man in the story is haunted. Is it just a story? Just a delusion by a twisted writer? Or maybe, just maybe, it's a first-hand account from a witness? Try to ignore the clock and listen closely to the 3 a.m. myth. Some people consider 3 a.m. to be the spirit's time to communicate with us. Others think it's the devil's mark. Some even think that when you wake up at this time, someone is watching you. But if someone were to be watching you, how would they watch you if there were no windows or doors in the room you were in? There are many superstitions for what 3 a.m. could be. I'm going to tell you the real meaning of this worldwide time myth. While you sleep soundly, you dream. While you dream, you were unaware of your surroundings, unaware of what could be lurking in the closet, under your bed, beside you, under your covers. Your eyes flutter open, and you check the time on either your cell phone, your alarm clock, or whatever you have laying around that has the time on it. But knowing the time doesn't really matter, right? You rub your eyes and blink a few times, adjusting to the darkness of your room. You hear the sounds of floorboards creaking, the sound of pitter-patter along the ground. "I'm sure it's just a mouse," you think to yourself. Maybe it's just a mouse, or a large rat. A very large rat indeed to be making such loud footsteps. You dare not look over the edge of your bed, for you are paralyzed in your fear. You're just scaring yourself. "Enough already with this foolishness," you tell yourself. But is it foolishness? Or is there a reason to be scared? Other monsters under the bed, waiting to snatch your feet and pull you under the bed when you get up in the middle of the night to use the restroom or get a drink of water. You did not believe in monsters. Those were stories that your mother and father told you years ago as a child. The Boogeyman, Sandman, and other monsters were just stories to give you a spook, right? Yeah, right. Monsters aren't real. You think and chuckle at your childish fears. But wait. What was that? That pitter of feet seemed to be getting closer. You squeeze your eyes tightly shut as you hear the long, loud screech of your door creaking open, ever so slowly. Was that a giggle you just heard? No, of course not. Mice don't giggle. Neither do rats. You're being delusional. You open your eyes slowly and stare at your ceiling. There is movement under your covers. The covers that you stand under to provide you warmth and comfort. It's moving towards you, slowly, in a crooked fashion. It looks as if it's limping beneath the blankets. You're frozen in terror, afraid to move, or else you might give away your location. You feel something tugging at the loose clothes that you wear. Oh Jesus, what is that? You yank away the covers and throw them to the ground, and gasp at what you see. The creature is lopsided, grotesque in a way that makes your stomach turn in knots. It wears torn fabric that looks like it's hundreds of years old. It tilts its head to the right and gives you a crooked smile. Its dark eyes without pupils stare at you, unblinking. You slowly begin to push yourself up into a sitting position, backing away from the creature. This doesn't seem to bother it, though. It simply limps closer and closer to you until it's reached your leg. It pulls itself onto you and begins to crawl, slowly, oh so slowly. It bears that crooked, toothy grin. Its gray skin hangs from its bony body. It smells horrid, a smell you've not come to face before. But you know this smell, even without having smelled it before. It's the smell of rot, but not like any rot. It's the stinging scent of rot, flesh, and blood. What are you going to do? You think, and lick your lips, eyes wide, not removing them from the creature. It's still inching its way up your body, coming closer and closer to your face with each limping step. You take in a deep breath through your nose, and then release a scream so loud you think you've popped your own eardrums. The creature suddenly jerks its head towards the door and lets out a murderous cry. It quickly limps to the edge of the bed and jumps, landing on the floor with a thump. It rushes out the door and disappears into the dark of the hallway. You see, 3 o'clock in the morning is when the dark things come out to play. When the dark things decide it's your lucky day. When the dark things show themselves. But don't let this deceive you. The first time you see them is almost certainly the last. You're lucky if you can get away safely. I cannot tell you how to deal with the dark things, for they are everywhere. In every home, every hole, nook and cranny your house has. How many you have in your home is not a question easily answered. All I can tell you is that there are many. They study you, and they plan your demise. No wonder they reek of death. Tick tock, tick tock. I hope you won't be waking up at 3 a.m. You never know who or what you'll find waiting. I don't have to worry about it, since usually I'm one of the things waiting. But, let's not worry about that now. Let's take our mind off the time and take a trip to Beelzebub for open mic night. Welcome, fiends, to open mic night at Beelzebub, where we invite you to sit right here and go into the more poetic side of fear. Poems of murder, creatures, and ghosts. All the things that scare you the most. Tonight's lead poem is about a crowd of people gathered around a salesman and seeing what he has to offer. Unfortunately for them, once they try what he's selling, they'll do anything for more. By an unknown author, it is Elysium. And to finish off open mic night is the podcast debut of one of the greatest and most influential authors of all time, and someone I've always taken massive inspiration from to end open mic night is Edgar Allan Poe, with one of his many masterpieces, A Dream Within a Dream. No setup needed, no talking points, just Poe. Cheers, applause, and roars. The Elysium holder had come. So gather round, hark these words, for within his jars are sweetened dreams. Tender, kept carefully, the allurement of the century, the liquor of Elysium, succulent in top finery. So come and come, buy your share. The people had gathered, money exchanged, jars sold in moments, people sickened with dreams. A single sip, the rumors had said, you'd feel the meaning of true happiness. You'd discover the world in its true beauty, freedom from human nature, elated and serene. So they sipped and sipped, and with every sip, their eyes would become illumined, sparked with the images of a world of pure perfection. But the beverage never lasted. The jar would empty. Their serenity would fade, break, distort. And it would hurt. A hideous, crude pain would acidify minds, for exposure to pure happiness showed the world in its true colors, naked and sickening, the world's corruption, all exposed by cloudless skies. The Elysium holder clapped his hands together, applauding the masterpiece he had produced. Now, now, no need to fear, there is still one last jar. Their greed of indulgence had left them empty. The crowd would scream a drunken pain. They needed Elysium to taste the impossible once more. Beasts and savages, a morbid transformation. Humanity and its mortality no longer in tune. Roses had fallen as thorns had rose. A galore of reddened smiles and perfume. Warped and twisted were those eyes. All had closed by their own strife. An impish grin as the jar was withheld. A chuckle was heard. Death's silence expelled. Take this kiss upon the brow, and in parting from you now, thus much let me avow. You are not wrong who deem that my days have been a dream. Yet if hope has flown away, in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of the golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep. While I weep, O God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? O God, can I not save one from the pitless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? The master, the reason for so many brilliant works. You can rest assured that will not be the last appearance of Edgar Allan Poe on this podcast. Masterful. Before we get to tonight's main feature, I want to ask you a favor. I would appreciate it if you've been enjoying this podcast, if you could make sure to subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, or any app that you listen on that lets you leave a review. And most importantly, share it with your friends. Tell them, be a listener, not a victim. Now that we've left the pub behind, and you're back to thinking you're safe, let's move to tonight's main story, and our second trip into the Newcastle Chronicles. This month's chapter of the Chronicles introduces us to a twisted entity that stalks and collects children, taunting them the way they taunted her before she takes her prize. Try to keep your children safe from the entity known as Mr. Cindy. I remember yesterday. Hello there. My name is Jeremy Mitchell. I'm an 11-year-old boy from Northeast Philadelphia. Some crazy things have been going on lately. Coronavirus, social distancing, and having to wear masks. We've been pretty lucky though. No one from my family's gotten sick. But then yesterday happened. It was such a nice day outside. March came and brought us plenty of nice weather. We can't go to the playground or school or things like that. But as long as I stay away from people, my dad says I can ride my bike. I was so happy being allowed to go out for the first time in weeks and ride my bike for just a couple of hours. Felt like the best thing since Christmas, which is when I got my new bike. Who would have thought it would have caused any problems? I rode all around the neighborhood without any problems. The sun was high in the air. Everything was whizzing by as I rode faster and faster. I don't know how long I was out there, but I started to get hungry and tired. So I took the turn and got back onto my street. And that's when I heard it, cutting through the traffic and the sound of my bike on Scaleman Avenue. The laughter, the giggling, like children hiding somewhere and watching me. I heard it coming from an alleyway, about 7 or 8 houses from mine. I crossed the street to take a look. It was so odd, the sun being out and overhead, but the alley was so dark, no light at all. I stood a few feet away, peering into the darkness. Then I saw a single pair of eyes, staring back at me, moving closer it seemed. Dirty fingers with long, disgusting fingernails appeared on either side of the alleyways. She stepped out of the alley, barefoot and covered in filth. A long, stained pink nightgown, the only clothing. Matted hair hung down to her shoulders with thin, messy hairs on her chin and upper lip. The eyes are what did it. Wild, bloodshot. A deep green that almost pulled you in. I pulled my bike back and stepped away. The giggling continued until she raised her hand for silence and then reached out for me.
Who are you? What do you want?
I asked in a small, timid voice. The stranger answered in a voice that I can't describe.
Mr. Cindy.
The name confused me, but I didn't want to ask any more questions. I just wanted to go home. I made a move to go, and Mr. Cindy moved to block my path. The giggling started up again, but this time I could see them. A group of children with gray skin, like they were covered in ash, and they were all missing their eyes.
Come and join the other children. They would love to have a new friend. With us, you'll always be a child. You'll always have fun and laugh and laugh and laugh.
And with that, Mr. Cindy rushed towards me. I could smell the foul, hot stench of her breath as she got closer. I shut my eyes tight and curled into a ball on the ground, waiting to feel those fingernails dig into my skin and drag me away.
Jeremy!
The voice of my father shouting. What are you doing? Get off the ground. Do not let your mother see that your brand new bike is laying on the dirty ground. I was so relieved, but so confused at the same time. Did you see it? Did you see Mr. Cindy? I asked my dad. See who? All I saw was you laying on the ground.
But Dad, there was this thing. It reached out to me. It reached out to drag me into the dark alley.
My father and I both turned and looked into the bright and well-lit alleyway. I think maybe you were cooped up too long. Your imagination got the best of you, buddy. Come on, let's go home. The stores still don't have much, so we're going to have to order pizza, and you can have ice cream later on. Just don't tell your mother any of this. She's crazy enough as it is. So me and my father made our way home. But I could swear I could hear the faintest laughter coming from the alley. But maybe he was right. Maybe I just imagined the whole thing. It seemed so real. The rest of the night went on like planned. pizza and ice cream. We watched Doolittle, which I liked. I don't think Dad liked it, though. Then it was time to get a shower and get ready for bed. The weirdness of earlier was still in my mind, but I was more focused on getting to go back out on my bike. The parking lot by the old Toys R Us is empty, and a perfect place to ride around and practice jumps on my bike. My dad started the usual goodnight ritual, which is always fun and loud. I thought I heard something else with it, but it quickly went away. We said our goodnights, and it didn't take long before I drifted off to sleep. When I woke up suddenly, my clock's little red numbers said 3:15 a.m. I'm not sure why I woke up, but when I tried to go back to sleep, that's when I heard it.
Mr. Cindy.
And a dirty, disgusting hand clamped over my mouth. There she was, Mr. Cindy in my bed. And she started with my eyes. I remember yesterday, the day I died. Poor Jeremy. He becomes just another piece in Mr. Cindy's collection. She is a terrifying addition to the Newcastle Chronicles, and I am sure many children on Skelwyn Avenue will find themselves hunted by her. Maybe she'll visit you in your dreams tonight. Now, I believe that is enough scares for this week. I hope you will join me again next week for more stories that are sure to keep you afraid during the day and awake at night. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the stories I had for you tonight. And until next time,
stay spooky.